Well, good afternoon. It's April 27th, 2023. Welcome to our study, Little Children for Today. It's 15:46 hours Eastern Daylight Time, and I'm Ward Green. Today's study is going to be from Exodus chapter 9, and I'd like to introduce the study today with a song written by the late Dan Fogelberg entitled Longer. Beautiful. The late, great Dan Fogelberg. So, for today's study from the Wild Road article, we have paragraph 11 in chapter 7 of part 1. And also, if we look back to just briefly review yesterday's illustration that was given from the Sinaitic inscriptions, we saw that there was a horse fleeing. In the translation, it said, "Fleeth the swift long horse, raising both forefeet together, going at full speed. His rider dashed to the ground." And then when we see the artist's drawing up above here, and we see the text upon which the artist rendered his drawing of the horses and the rider on the ground, we see that it begins on the right hand side, because abjads read from right to left. that's the nature of these alphabets, which are such as Old Arabic and such as Hebrew. So we read from right to left, so the horses would be on the right, since they're in the beginning of the text translation here. And then the rider, of course, when he flees his helmet violently with both hands, he is near the end of the text translation, therefore he needs to appear on the left. And indeed, that's where we see the artist's rendering of the man running on the ground. So there is a perfect correspondence there, even though it's difficult to absorb it all in the first viewing. So, today, paragraph 11 of chapter 7. Two more examples will suffice to illustrate the power of the signature to manifest the Exodus. In the first example, there are multiple instances in the signature showing Israel a stubborn, quote-unquote, ass. The Bible records that Israel was a rebellious people. There are four separate known examples of SIs, or Sinaitic inscriptions, having to do with the quote-unquote people kicking, like a quote-unquote ass, translated with the help of illustrations of a donkey. Of course, that is the word in today's English for ass. The only difficulty was of the translation of the very language of the signature done by Mr. Forrester, and this objection vanishes by sheer numbers of cases. The Wadi Mokateb has literally thousands of the Sinaitic inscriptions, and we call that also the signature also, and is translated as the Valley of the Inscriptions. That is the Wadi Mokateb. One of these, Mr. G.F. Gray's number 59, was obtained, that's inscription number 59, by the ingenuity of loosing the camels at night to occupy the Arab guides for several hours the next day, finding and retrieving them, while tracings were made by those who had thus bought themselves time, here prerequisite. It may appear cruelty toward the Arab guides, although Richard Pocock relates a warning story of a mistake, quote-unquote, mistake of paying some who take gain from all future visitors. In the story that was related by Richard Pocock, a traveler paid an Arab guide a certain number of coins or a certain amount of money. And from then on, all future visitors were charged that same amount of money by any future Arab guides for that service that was requested. And the man who paid the Arab guides voluntarily paid the money initially. And so this is the reason why Richard Pocock describes this as a quote-unquote mistake of paying the Arab guides. A man who lived for 4 years in Palestine and Arabia Petraea, who was domesticating himself at leisure in the camps of the Bedouins, as a fellow and tutor of Cambridge University, recently returned from the East, Mr. Forster mentions him as a gentleman, was able to, upon examining it, confirm the identification of Mara in Mr. Gray's SI number 59 from Wadi Mokateb, the shape of the waterhole being depicted in exact outline, and with, quote, a quadruped opposite the last line but one, end quote. Forster foretold to friends the identification of this quadruped as quote, an ass, unquote, which within the next day or so was verified by a duplicate inscription provided by an Oriental scholar, showing also the, quote, figure of an ass, unquote. Thus was, quote, Mara, unquote, identified with certainty as Hawara, lending certainty to the Israelite route from crossing the Red Sea to Hawara in 3 days' travel by foot. This is an astounding bit of confirmation and factual information derived and apparently derivable from the inscriptions that were found, which makes it absolutely wonderful and just so fortuitous and so unexpected. It's the only concrete evidence in existence, or proof, that is, of the place of Mara being it's the only independent proof outside the Bible that's known of this place of Hawara or Mara being the place that Israel stopped after 3 days. Or 3 days after, that is, they crossed the Red Sea, which is incredible. And here's the inscription here. It says that the inscription is there. And at the bottom of the inscription, the person who copied the inscription wrote these words, a quadruped, opposite the last line but one. So there should have been a drawing of a quadruped, a four-legged animal. That's what a quadruped is. Opposite the last line but one, which is on this second last line here, there should have been a drawing, but he didn't draw that. He just wrote in a quadruped. Maybe he wasn't an artist, so he didn't draw the quadruped. And later on, that was confirmed. Because of what the content of this translation was, Mr. Forrester translated it, "The people with prone mouth drinketh at the water springs," and the spring is, of course, drawn in here. We see the sketch. It's been either drawn or taken by a rubbing on the rock so that we see the shape of the water there. There are two bays of water where the water comes into a point in two places there. One up on the third last line and one between the second last and last lines, we see the shape of the water hole, which was a narrow body of water, and it had two narrow projections that are drawn there. And then the rest of the translation says, "The people at the two water springs kick us like an ass, smiting with branch of a tree the well of bitterness he heals." And there's a reference to Deuteronomy 32 and 15 there. But this is the translation of this particular Sinaitic inscription, which was written in Jebel Mokateb, right, which is called the Valley of the Inscriptions. Or it's from Wadi. Wadi Mokateb means the Valley of the Inscriptions. But Jebel Mokateb is the same place, Mokateb. And this is where they got this writing. It was written in the rocks. It was, it's an actual living piece of history in the rock. And it mentions the donkey. Right? So Mr. Forrester, having translated it as saying that the people kicketh like an ass, he believed there would be a drawing of an ass. In other words, that the quadruped mentioned by the person who took the copy, that quadruped, he predicted would be, he wisely predicted would be an ass. And that was later proven. So that's today's study. This is amazing. Because another copy of this of this inscription, or another very similar inscription, appeared elsewhere, which confirmed that the quadruped was in fact a donkey. So that's it for today's study of that. It's so exciting to see living actual proof of the Exodus in the inscriptions of the Sinai Peninsula, and that's what this chapter is about. Our proverb for today is Ecclesiastes chapter 2. Well, we've got a couple of them. You can take your pick again. It's Ecclesiastes 2 and 13. "And I saw, even I, that there exists more advantage for wisdom than for folly, just as there is more advantage for light than for darkness. And the other one, I think I know it by heart. Better is a handful of hard work. No, better is a handful of rest than a double handful. Than a double handful of hard work and striving after the wind. Or something and something else along with it. Wait a minute. Is it and striving after wind? I think it is. We'll see. 4 and 6. Yeah. Better is a handful of rest than a double handful of hard work and striving after the wind. It's not better as a handful of hard work, you notice? It's not better to have a handful of hard work. It's better to have a handful of rest than a double handful of hard work. And if we can correlate that to what we just read at Ecclesiastes 2 and 13, we see that there's more advantage for wisdom than for folly. So perhaps the rest is compared to rest. I mean, perhaps the rest is compared to wisdom. And the hard work to folly. That's one way of comparing those two scriptures, possibly correlating those two scriptures, those two verses, which is rather interesting, I think. It's rather edifying. Now, the next thing is we want to look at our reading for today. Little children, Exodus chapter 8, then Jehovah said to Moses, go into Pharaoh. And you must say to him, this is what Jehovah has said. Send my people away that they may serve me. And if you keep refusing to send them away, here I am plaguing all your territory with frogs. That was yesterday's. Consequently, Jehovah said to Moses, go into Pharaoh and you must state to him, this is what Jehovah, the God of the Hebrews, has said. Send my people away that they may serve me. But if you continue refusing to send them away and you are still keeping hold of them, look, Jehovah's hand is coming upon your livestock that is in the field, on the horses, the asses, the camels, the herd, and the flock. There will be a very heavy pestilence. And Jehovah will certainly make a distinction between the livestock of Israel and the livestock of Egypt, and not a thing of all that belongs to the sons of Israel will die. End quote. Moreover, Jehovah set an appointed time, saying, quote, tomorrow Jehovah will do this thing in the land. End quote. Accordingly, Jehovah did this thing on the next day, and all sorts of livestock of Egypt began to die. But not one of the livestock of the sons of Israel died. Then Pharaoh sent, and look, not so much as one of Israel's livestock had died. Nevertheless, Pharaoh's heart continued to be unresponsive, and he did not send the people away. After that, Jehovah said to Moses and Aaron, take for yourselves both hands full of soot from a kiln, and Moses must toss it toward the heavens in Pharaoh's sight. And it must become a powder upon all the land of Egypt. And it must become boils breaking out with blisters upon man and beast in all the land of Egypt. So they took the soot of a kiln and stood before Pharaoh. And Moses tossed it toward the heavens. And it became boils with blisters breaking out on man and beast. And the magic practicing priests were unable to stand before Moses as a result of the boils, because the boils had developed on the magic practicing priests and on all the Egyptians. But Jehovah let Pharaoh's heart become obstinate, and he did not listen to them, just as Jehovah had stated to Moses. Then Jehovah said to Moses, get up early in the morning and take a position in front of Pharaoh, and you must say to him, this is what Jehovah, the God of the Hebrews, has said. Send my people away that they may serve me, for at this time I'm sending all my blows against your heart and upon your servants and your people, to the end that you may know that there is none like me in all the earth. For by now I could have thrust my hand out that I might strike you and your people with pestilence, and that you might be effaced from the earth. But in fact, for this cause I have kept you in existence, for the sake of showing you my power, and in order to have my name declared in all the earth. Are you still behaving haughtily against my people in not sending them away? Here I am causing it to rain down tomorrow about this time a very heavy hail, the like of which has never occurred in Egypt from the day it was founded until now. And now send, bring all your livestock and all that is yours in the field under shelter. As for any man and beast that will be found in the field and not gathered into the house, the hail will have to come down upon them and they will have to die. Anyone who feared Jehovah's word among Pharaoh's servants caused his own servants and his livestock to flee into the houses. But whoever did not set his heart to have any regard for Jehovah's word left his servants and his livestock in the field. Jehovah now said to Moses, stretch out your hand toward the heavens that hail may come on all the land of Egypt, upon man and beast and all vegetation of the field in the land of Egypt. So Moses stretched out his rod toward the heavens, and Jehovah gave thunders and hail, and fire would run down to the earth. And Jehovah kept making it rain down hail upon the land of Egypt. Thus there came hail, the fire quivering in among the hail. Perhaps that's the lightning. It was very heavy, so that there had not occurred any like it in all the land of Egypt from the time it became a nation. And the hail went striking at all the land of Egypt. The hail struck everything that was in the field, from man to beast, and all sorts of vegetation of the field, and it shattered all sorts of trees of the field. Only in the land of Goshen, where the sons of Israel were, there occurred no hail. Eventually, Pharaoh sent and called Moses and Aaron and said to them, I have sinned this time. Jehovah is righteous, and I and my people are in the wrong. Entreat Jehovah that this may be enough of the occurring of God's thunders and hail. Then I am willing to send you away, and you will not stay any longer. Once again, looks like Pharaoh is having a change of heart. So Moses said to him, as soon as I go out of the city, I shall spread my hands up to Jehovah. The thunders will stop, and the hail will not continue any longer, in order that you may know that the earth belongs to Jehovah. As for you and your servants, I know already that you will not even then show fear because of Jehovah God. As it was, the flax and the barley had been struck because the barley was in the ear and the flax had flower buds, but the wheat and the spelt had not been struck because they were seasonally late. Moses now went out of the city from Pharaoh and spread his hands up to Jehovah, and the thunders and the hail began to stop, and rain did not pour down on the earth. When Pharaoh got to see that the rain and the hail and the thunders had stopped, he went sinning again and making his heart unresponsive, he as well as his servants. And Pharaoh's heart continued obstinate, and he did not send the sons of Israel away, just as Jehovah had stated by means of Moses. That's the end of Exodus chapter 9. So we see that Pharaoh may well have intended, he may have had good intentions, he may have intended to send the people away. But once the plague was passed, and once in this case the hail had stopped, he didn't see any reason. Why should I send the people away? There's no plague anymore. There's no trouble at the moment. He just had his heart was unresponsive, and he didn't keep his promise. He didn't have any sense of righteousness about keeping his word or anything of that nature. To him, he didn't know or understand that principle, apparently, of when you give your word to something, you are obliged to keep it in good conscience. He didn't have any sort of bad conscience over this. He just became obstinate and changed his mind once again, back to being unwilling to send the sons of Israel away or allow them to celebrate their festival. So that's today's study. Yes, we have a new member in the family called Willie, and I'll be able to show you that tomorrow, because I'll be changing and I'll be using Willie. I'll be putting Willie on my right wrist, I believe. At least that's my plan. But for right now, for Ward, it's Moppy and Crow saying, I love you. Bye for now. Have a wonderful day. I hope you enjoyed it, and thank you for watching.